We will then just go into the introduction for the benefit of those that have just joined us this afternoon. I'm Linda Rotten from the Chairperson of the Department of Human Health. Next to me is Robert Machalango, Secretary of the Committee. My extreme right is Moses, who is part of the talent team doing the research. Next to her is Bushel, who is our content advisor. Asanda, next to her, who is a research of the ENC study group. And then next to her is Zubair, who is also our research chair. I'll then hand over to members to introduce themselves. And after that, it will be the department. And then it will be people that have come to join us in terms of guests. They will use the mic. The house rules are phones are off or on silent. Questions are only asked by members, those that are presenting. In this case, it's the National Department of Health. And you can mingle during break, but during the proceeding, only the members and the department in this case. I'll hand over to you, honorable members.
Dumelang kaofela. Nna ke ngaka Maisela wa ga Maisela, ke leloko la komiti e ya bophelo mo palamenteng. Ke a leboga.
Thank you, honorable chair and honorable members. I'm Ben Pele, I'm the DDG National.
Good afternoon, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. I'm Jeanette Hunter. I'm the DDG for Primary Health Care at the National Department of Health.
Good afternoon, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. I'm Valerie Rennie, Head of Corporate Services at National Health.
Good afternoon, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. I'm Gail Andrews, CLO, National Department of Health.
Good day, Honourable Members and the Chair. My name is Joe Maida, I'm the spokesperson for the Department of Health.
Good afternoon, Chair and Honourable Members. My name is Gaurika Kasama, Office of the Deputy Minister.
Good afternoon. My name is Bob Governor from Mediclinic.
My name is Anne Stone from Anne Stone and Associates.
Good afternoon, Chair and Honourable Members. My name is Nancy Sayalo.
You're from?
PMI.
PMI? What is PMI?
Philip Morris.
What is it? Law firm, NGO?
It's a private company, tobacco manufacturer.
Okay.
Good afternoon, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members and the Department. I'm Francois van der Merwe. I'm the Chairman of the Tobacco Institute of Southern Africa.
Thank you. Mr. Bongin Zwakali, also from the Tobacco Institute of Southern Africa.
Good afternoon, it's Solomon Jackson, representing Solomon Jackson from the Tobacco Institute.
Hello. Good afternoon. My name is Oluwole Olakemi from the Parliamentary Monitoring Group.
Well, thank you very much. We'll then hand over to the department. In fact, we have got apologies, members, are the same apologies that we had, but this time we have also got an apology from the DG of the Department of Health, because he's also in the evidence in the life which is given here in the United today. So that is why she is not here. We'll then hand over. We don't know who's here in the team, so we'll be guided by you to hand over.
Thank you, Chair. I'll do the presentation, and then I think during questions, my colleagues will certainly come in. The CFO will do the presentation in terms of the financial report. Chair, just to highlight some of the achievements of the department over the period, we have implemented a Mom Connect, which is a messaging system using cell phone technology to over 117,000 women. In addition, we have implemented the She Congress program. We have, over the period, implemented the 1990 targets, which have been achieved in a number of districts. We have implemented the PMTCT program, which has resulted in less than 1.4% positivity rate amongst newborns. We have implemented the improvement in the TB death rate nationally. We have started with the bedaquiline and the laminate programs in terms of NDR-TB, as well as the HPRS program, which has registered over 6 million South Africans as part of the registration system. We have 1.2 million people on the chronic medicine program, and the SBS system, which monitors medicine availability and facilities, has been implemented to over 3,000 clinics in the country. I'll go through the details of each of these programs, Chair. So our National Development Plan Vision for 2030 states that we will raise the life expectancy of South Africans to 70 years. We will progressively improve the TB prevention and cure rate. We'll reduce maternal infant and child mortality, reduce the prevalence of non-communicable diseases, reduce injury, accidents, and violence by 50% from the 2010 levels, complete the health system's reforms, establish a primary healthcare teams to provide care for families and communities, implement universal health coverage, and fill posts with skilled, committed, and competent individuals. In terms of the MTSF framework for the 2014 to 2019 period, our outcomes are to achieve universal health coverage progressively achieved through the implementation of NHI, improve the quality of healthcare, re-engineering of primary healthcare, reducing the healthcare costs in the health system, improving the human resources for health, improving the health management and leadership, improving health facility planning and infrastructure, preventing and successfully managing HIV and AIDS and TB, reducing maternal, infant, and child mortality, and additionally implementing an efficient health management information. So if I can go to the first program, which is Program 1, which is administration. Under Program 1, we have a vacancy rate of 8.1%, which is below the DPSA target of 10%. We have a turnaround time for the recruitment process within the department of 4 months, which exceeds our DPSA benchmark of 6%. The National Department has for 6 consecutive years now obtained an unqualified audit opinion from the AG for the 2016-17 financial year. And in the 2016-17 financial year, 4 out of the 9 provinces have demonstrated improvements in the audit outcomes or opinions that have been reached. These are Gauteng, Eastern Cape, and Western Cape, which have maintained their unqualified audit opinions in this pursuant to the 2016 financial year. The Free State has received an unqualified audit opinion after 13 years. Moving to the specific areas, our National Department of Health vacancy rate, as I said, was 8.1%. In terms of the percentage of senior managers that have entered into performance agreements with their supervisors, 97% of the SMS members have entered into these agreements. In terms of the percentage of employees that are accessing health and wellness programs, 95.8% of employees are part of this program. The business continuity plan has been developed for the department. A number of communication interventions have been implemented, 94 in total. If we move to the SMS members that have signed performance agreements, 3 of them had not signed these, but they did sign them after the deadline, so they eventually did comply in terms of the requirements. So I can move to Program 2 now, Chair. In terms of Program 2, which is the National Health Insurance, the final white paper was submitted to Cabinet for consideration before the end of March, and it was published on the 30th of June 2017. The Minister announced at the point of publishing the white paper, implementation structures linked to the implementation of NHI, and there are 7 implementation committees that have been identified, they've been called for nominations for individuals to participate in the NHI draft bill has been produced and is scheduled for submission to Cabinet and is in the Cabinet process currently. In terms of the legislation relating to NHI, the bill has been drafted. In terms of the establishment of the National Health Insurance Fund, a draft document on the funding mortality for the NHI fund has been developed. This includes a budget reallocation for the district primary health care, which has been updated. In terms of medicine availability, which is a sub-program within this branch, by the end of March 2017, 1.2 million patients were receiving their prescribed medicines through the CCMDD program, and 3,121 PSC facilities have implemented the electronic stock management system known as SDS. In terms of this has exceeded our targets, which was way below that. 650,000 patients in the CCMDD, 1,800 facilities being put into the SDS. At hospital level, we have implemented the electronic stock management system for the early detection of the stopper. The number of hospitals using the system to strengthen demand planning and governance has increased from 52 to 123. Basically, the way the system works in terms of SBS is the cell phone is used to scan the barcode on the medicine, and this is then uploaded to the server, which is located centrally in the office of Victoria, and where we have full visibility in terms of the availability. This has had a significant improvement in the availability of ARVs, TB medicines, as well as vaccines, and the data around each of those. So, Chair, in terms of the... In terms of the number of facilities reporting stock availability at the National Surveillance Center to monitor its availability, 10 central hospitals, 17 tertiary, 159 district, 42 regional, and 3,121 PSC clinics have implemented this connectivity, which means that all of their data gets sent to the National Department. We have also implemented the Provincial Medicine Procurement Units, which basically is a system of direct delivery of medicines, and in the last financial year, the Northwest and the KZN Departments of Health had the PMPUs established. the chronic medicine program, 1.2 million patients have access to the program. In terms of pharmaceutical tenders, 60% of the pharmaceutical tenders were awarded 8 weeks prior to the expiry of the outgoing contract. In terms of the single exit price for medicines, these were gazetted in the 2016-17 financial year. We also drafted regulations relating to the UPFS, which is the Uniform Patient Fee Schedule. We have developed a repository of funded and unfunded patients, which relates to medical scheme members. We have also implemented a national electronic system to monitor supplier performance. So pharmaceutical suppliers are rated on a system which is quarterly assessed. We've also established a forum relating to transparency on medicine availability, which includes pharmaceutical manufacturers, the private sector, wholesalers, as part of this process. Moving on within Program 2, to the implementation of the patient-based health information system and PSE facilities. This is part of our e-health strategy implementation and the development of the health patient registration system, which is called HPRS. This was developed in partnership with the Department of Science and Technology and the Council for Scientific and Industrial Research, CSIR. In terms of this system, we have registered to date over 6 million South Africans who are registered on the system by the 31st of March, and this makes a significant difference to the way patient filing and the access of files of patients are now implemented. In terms of research, the department has conducted the South African Demographic and Health Survey between June and October 2016 in order to track the health status of South Africans. The Demographic and Health Survey covered 15,000 households across provinces, selected to be a nationally representative sample. The trained teams interviewed people in face-to-face interviews. They also took samples and took measurements of blood pressure, height, weight, anemia, etc. And the data has been collected, analyzed, and was released on the 15th of May 2017. We also have implemented the National Health Scholars Program, which aims to provide master's and doctoral scholarships in order to develop a cadre of young health researchers in South Africa. The program is a collaborative effort between the National Department and the Chief Executive Office of 40 companies funded through the Public Health Enhancement Fund. In 2016-17, 17 new students were enrolled on the program. Since the launch of the program in 2013, a total of 88 students have been enrolled in the NHSP. We have 11 PhDs and 4 masters. In terms of the e-health strategy, the health normative standards framework for interoperability protocol and first layer of health information exchange has been developed, and 1,854 PhD facilities are implementing the web-based health patient registration system. In terms of the National Research Strategic Plan, a costed national health research plan has been approved, and the DHS data collection has been complete. We have drafted monitoring framework for the NHI. 9 provincial APPs have been reviewed, and the provinces have been given feedback and to ensure that there's alignment between their APPs and that of the National Health Department. There's also an integration of the planning framework, which was developed and presented to the National Health Council. Moving to African regional and global health, the department continues to participate in the development and implementation of various regional health initiatives to combat the cross-border spread of diseases such as malaria. For the implementation, we have participated in the Elimination 8, which is the 8 countries, and the Mosawa, which is Mozambique, South Africa, and Swaziland malaria initiatives, the SADC HIV-AIDS cross-border initiative, and the SADC TB in Mind initiative, which I think Dr. Kibasawa spoke about earlier, as well as the Zazibona initiative, which is strengthening medicine regulation across the region. South Africa has also participated in negotiations and influenced the outcomes of various global meetings to ensure the strengthening of global governance. The DG has been central in many of these committees, particularly the UN Health, the High-Level Commission on Health, Employment, and Economic Growth, the UN High Level Meeting on Antimicrobial Resistance and the UN High Level Panel on Access to Medicine, amongst various others. In terms of the international health, we have 5 international treaties that have been implemented. There's been 1 audit for ratification of one of the trade facilitation agreements. We have 10 multilateral frameworks reviewed and implemented. 14 strategic bilateral projects were implemented, and 5 signed bilateral agreements were also reviewed. In terms of quality of care, in 2016-17, we undertook preparatory work, which led to the Lancet Commission on Quality launched in the 11th of May this year. The commission is tasked to review the quality of healthcare delivery in South Africa and make improvements. The policy guidelines on complaints and patient safety to improve quality of care were also produced. And then patient experiences of care in the primary healthcare facilities in South Africa were collected and completed in 168 facilities across the 9 provinces to understand patient experience, satisfaction, and associated factors. The final report is expected during October. So a patient experience of care self-assessment survey tool was implemented in 1,200 facilities. A national survey was conducted to measure the patient experience of care in selected PHC facilities across all the provinces. The policy guideline on managing complaints, compliments, and suggestions was developed, and this has been approved. The policy guideline to manage patient safety incident reporting and learning was developed and approved by the NHS. Moving to revenue retention, an approved revenue retention model will be presented to the Health Sector 10 by 10. This has been done. All related preparatory activities for revenue retention will be undertaken in this financial year. Nominations for multi-stakeholder forum relating to medicine availability have been completed, and quarterly meetings have been hosted. The national policy to manage complaints, compliments, and suggestions for the health system for use has been formed part of the annual performance plan for 17. Moving now to Program 3, which is HIV/AIDS, tuberculosis, maternal, child, and women health. Prevention remains the mainstay of our efforts to combat HIV and AIDS. For the 2016-17 financial year, 14 million people were tested for HIV, which is well above our target of 10 million. 917 million male and 26 million female condoms were distributed against a new target of 750 million and 17 million female condoms, respectively. We continue to reduce the number of infants who are infected with HIV, with a PCR positivity rate of 1.3, which is below our target of 1.4. In terms of children with less than 5 years having diarrhea as a case fatality, that was 2%, which is improving on our target of 3.25. In terms of pneumonia case fatality, it was 2% as well, which is an improvement against our target of 2.6. And in terms of TB, and 5 years of early initiation of treatment, it was 94.7%, which was against our target of 94%. So moving to strategies to reduce the maternal mortality ratio to under 100 per 1,000 live births. We've achieved 65.2. In terms of postnatal visits within 6 days, this is 70.3. The maternal mortality in-facility ratio is 116. The inpatient neonatal death rate is 12.4 per 1,000 live births. The couple-year protection rate is 70.2. Cervical cancer screening coverage is 61.5. Our antenatal initiation rate on ART is at 95.1, and our PCR positivity at 6 weeks is 1.3, which is below the target that we had set. In terms of case fatality, we have improvements in diarrheal case fatality, pneumonia case fatality, in terms of severe acute malnutrition as well, and then in terms of measles, the confirmed measles case incidence per million total population, 0.31. Immunization coverage is 82%. Our infant exclusively breastfed at third dose is 41%. our first dose dropout rate is 11.7% below the average, and then measles second dose coverage is 96.3%, which is above our target of 80%. Moving to strategies to contribute to health and well-being of learners by screening for health barriers to learning. School grade 1 learners that are screened, 3,087 were screened relative to a target of 327. School grade learners 8 that were screened was 179,000 against a target of 109. Girls 9 years and older that received their first dose of HPV above the target at 420,000. Girls 9 years and older receiving the second dose. This was at 327,000. TB clients 5 years and older that initiated on treatment. This is above our target of 94.7. And then the rifampicin resistant clients on treatment initiation was at 62.9%. Continuing with TB check, TB client success rate is at 85.6%. Our client loss to follow-up is at 6.1, which is above our target. Our client death rate is at 4.5, which is good. Our TB MDR client loss is at 18.8%. Our TB client MDR TB client death rate is at 21.8%, and our MDR TB success rate is 54.3%. Moving to TB co-infection with HIV. The initiation rate here is 88%, which is above our target. The number of patients tested for HIV is 14 million, which was above our target of 10. The number of medical male circumcisions performed is 491,000. The male medical condoms distributed, 917 million. Female, 26 million, which is both above the target. Continuing with the program three, there were three national quarterly meetings and reports presented. Remedial actions were developed on all districts that implemented maternal and child rates greater than 2%. Two provincial departments developed plans around reducing SAM. Oral polio vaccine switch report was finalized and approved. We also trained in terms of the cervical cancer control policy and guidelines. The breast cancer policy guidelines were also finalized. Moving to district implementation plans that were developed, 46 district implementation plans were developed with 46 health districts. 42 district implementation plans were monitored and reports were produced. Three national quarterly monitoring dashboards have been produced for HIV conditional grant as well. And then the 2015 national antenatal surveillance data has been collected as well. Three national quarterly monitoring dashboard reports were produced with recommendations. In terms of percentage of inmates screened for TB on admission, that's at 83.2%. And the percentage of control mines providing routine TB screening is 95.5%, which is above the top. The basic antenatal care strategy has been implemented from 1st of April 2017 to address challenges of slow births, preeclampsia resulting from hypertensive disorders of pregnancy. The implementation of the safe cesarean section package has been introduced to prevent maternal deaths due to hemorrhage. The medical male circumcision program has been contracted through the National Treasury tender in 24 districts where there's no PEPFAR support. A new delaminate clinical access program has also been implemented, and a 9-month short course MDR regimen has been implemented as well. Continuous monitoring with implementation of facilities performing poorly as the result of non-compliance with guidelines. Facilities will be supported through the training on guidelines related to ART and data management. Chief, I can move to program 4, which is primary healthcare services. 786 PSC facilities have qualified as ideal clinics. which is above our target of 750. Guidelines for district health management office structures have been completed. A handbook of training material was developed to institutionalize the uniform approach to in regard to the establishment and sustainability of government structures. A conference was held in commemoration of the World Environmental Health Day in Mpumalanga province. The promotion of health literacy through health information education as well as behavioral change communication intervention were intensified throughout the year in collaboration with partners and provinces, with a special focus on our health calendar events. We have developed guidelines for the implementation of the district management office. 3,211 facilities have been audited and 2,095 functional committees exist. 3,275 functional robots committees exist. 786 PSD facilities in 52 districts qualify as ID clinics. 35 district and metropolitan municipalities have been audited in terms of environmental health services. A national health hygiene strategy has been finalized and approved, and workshops have been held in provinces. 9 provincial implementation plans have been developed with regard to healthcare waste management. An operating framework for the National Health Commission has been approved. The 45 points of entry have been audited on norms and standards, and the IHR requirements and reports have been produced in this regard. Moving to the National Guide on Healthy Meal Provision for the Workplace, 43 national departments were orientated on the National Guide for a Healthy Meal Provision in the Workplace. In addition, 3 other public entities and professional associations. Guidelines were developed on the consultation which was conducted, and this was approved by the NSC. The final legal opinion on the Tobacco Products Control Act was received. The final draft has been submitted to the Legal Services Unit for processing to cabinet. Random samples of salt content in food was conducted, and this was done for 13 regulated food categories. In terms of the number of districts implementing the framework and model for rehabilitation services, 8 provinces have implementation plans. The cataract surgery rate, 1,132 operations per million uninsured population was conducted. The malaria incidence per 1,000 population at risk was 0.4 malaria cases per 1,000 population. The number of malaria-targeted districts reporting malaria cases in 24 hours was 9 malaria targeted districts, with 310 facilities reporting malaria cases within 24 hours of diagnosis. The number of provincial outbreak response teams capacitated to respond to infectious outbreaks, the 9 provincial outbreak response teams have been trained on foodborne disease outbreaks. In terms of the number of high-risk populations covered with seasonal influenza vaccination, 8,096 high-risk individuals have been vaccinated. Regulations on organ transplants have been developed. Also, regulations on dialysis have been developed. A national policy framework and strategy on eye health, including provincial eye health centers for cataracts, have been developed. In terms of the strategy for the establishment of a specialist mental health team, 8 district mental health teams have been established. Technical support has been provided to the Mpumalanga province for the development of a national policy framework and strategy for disability and rehabilitation services. Spray coverage has increased and surveillance and treatment has been stepped up for malaria along the border through the regional and cross-border initiatives such as Elimination AIDS and MOSASWA. A national stakeholder consultative meeting has been held to improve the content of the guidelines on nutrition and early childhood development. Sheva can move to program 5, which is hospitals, tertiary services and workforce development. National regulations governing the provision of EMS, and these are in the process of being promulgated. Criminal Justice System Reform Committee, which is an audit of SAPS and Forensic Service Watch Fees, was finalized in March 2017 in order to deal with the issue of the backlogs that exist. A new basic nursing qualification program draft curricula was developed in line with the National Nursing Education and Training Policy. 88 nursing and midwifery educators have undergone training and development programs, which is exceeding our targets of 50. And 65 new facilities have complied with a gazetted infrastructure norms and standards against our target of 52. In terms of the number of hospitals that have achieved overall performance in compliance with the national core standards, these are 18 hospitals. Central hospitals with standardized organizational structures in their hospitals. The organizational structures have been approved by the technical NHC. The districts and regional hospitals with mental health inpatient units have been established, and there are 29 in total. Guidelines for human resources norms and standards using the WISEN methodology. The activity standards for district hospitals have been developed. The norms for regional, tertiary, and central hospitals have not been developed yet. The number of facilities benchmarked against the primary healthcare normative guide. These are 3,149 in total. The new basic nursing qualification program has been drafted with draft curricula. The number of nursing and midwifery educators identified nationally and registered for training in terms of the development program, the 88 nursing and midwifery educators on training. In terms of the implementation of the nursing strategy, a monitoring system has been put in place and a report has been produced in terms of the strategy implementation. The number of facilities that have been maintained and repaired or furnished refurbished in terms of the NHI districts, there are 67 facilities that have been repaired that are outside the NHI districts at 37. The clinics and community health centers that have been constructed or revitalized, 22 clinics and CSCs. The number of hospitals that have been constructed and revitalized, 3. And then the number of facilities that have complied with the presented infrastructure norms and standards, 65%. In terms of the infrastructure monitoring system, this has been approved by the National Health Council, and a dashboard of reports has been developed. The provinces that comply with the EMS regulations, the compliance checklist has been developed, and this has been approved by the EMS committee, National EMS Committee. Looking at the backlog elimination for blood alcohol tests, there's a 67% elimination of the backlog. Backlog of toxicology tests, 16% has been eliminated. The percentage of food tests that have been completed within the turnaround time is 58%. The managers that are accessing coaching and mentoring programs are two hospital CEOs and PSC managers. And then the managers using the Knowledge Hub information system, two hospital CEOs and six PSC facility manager. An additional 24 managers participated in various coaching and mentoring pilot programs. In terms of EMS education and training of personnel, a checklist has been developed for EMS education and training, which is in line with the policy. The regulations for EMS have been drafted. The number of EMS in mass gatherings has been finalized. The draft regulations for the rendering of forensic pathology services have been developed and submitted to the state law advisor. A draft scope of practice guidelines for rendering of forensic pathology services has been developed. A monitoring system has been developed and implemented for monitoring facilities that render services for the management of sexual and related offenses. And 9 regional training centers have been established. A ministerial task team was established to look into quality issues at hospitals. More facilities are planned to be peer-reviewed and supported hospitals that do not comply with the national core standards. Regarding the toxicology analysis, a non-blue sky approach will be implemented through the first quarter of 2017-18 in order to reduce the backlog. The development of staffing norms has required more time and originally was mapped out, put in place to deal with the issues that arise out of the norms and standards work. So efforts have been made to identify and view the alternative resources that would be required at facility level. And the infrastructure target setting will take individual project stages into account. Moving to the last program, which is health regulations and compliance management. SAPRA was listed as a public entity. Then the PICA bill that was approved by Cabinet and is now in Parliament. The Compensation Commission for Occupational Disease reported earlier around their performance achievements over the past financial year. So SAPRA was listed on the 2nd of February. The National Institute for Occupational Health, which were originally supposed to be linked to the CCOD, has actually been incorporated into the PISA. The CCOD and MBD remain a separate component. The comments on the NAPISA bill were considered, and the revised bill was prepared, submitted to Cabinet and Parliament. In total, the number of entities and statutory councils that are fully functional and compliant with good governance practices, we have 4 health entities and the 5 statutory health professional councils. A standardized performance management system has been implemented for board members, and these have been fully implemented. 3 new boards were appointed and 2 new boards were inducted and trained in terms of governance. Dashboards have been developed in order to monitor the performance of entities as well as statutory health councils. And the standardized reporting template was developed to include the departments relating to representatives that sit on these boards so that they can provide reports. The appointment of the SAPRA board and the CEO has been finalized, and the board has been appointed, and will then begin its work. The public inputs on the establishment of NAPISA were considered, and the National Institute for Occupational Health was incorporated into the NAPISA bill, and the considerations relating to the NAPISA bill were also made in order to deal with issues of occupational health. In terms of human resources management, there's an outline of the number of posts that have been approved, the number of filled posts, and the vacancy rate. The DPSA guideline is less than 10%, and the department is at 8.1%, which is below the DPSA. I'll now hand over to the CFO to deal with the financial management.
Thank you for the financial performance. The first matter is, I'm going to say this, we received an unqualified audit opinion for the 6 year running. We had 2 emphases of matter. One was accruals that exceeded the funds to be surrendered. And just to explain it, Chair, we had an underspend of about 101 million on the financial year. But our accruals that we attribute to voted funds was about 124 million. So what the AG said was that if we had spent those accruals, we would have an overspend of 23 million. And if you equate that 23 million to our total budget, it's about a 0.06% over expenditure potentially. So we do understand that the AG, in terms of methodology, has got to evaluate the going concern of provinces and departments, and this is what has happened here. The second one was the early adoption of disclosure of inventory. I think it's not a negative issue, but as a department, we decided to adopt the inventory disclosure and have it audited. It's in anticipation of the National Treasury guidelines that will make us that will force departments to disclose it and also form part of the audit opinion of the AG. So we feel that we've gone quite a long way in dealing with the inventory matter. Should become a disclosure. On expenditure, we set at 99.7% spent by the end of the financial year. You can see that all our programs were underspent to some degree, but in total 0.03% under expenditure. And I think this is probably one of the better expenditure trends that we've had in the last four or five years. You can also see from this that There's no unauthorized expenditure within the department at all by any reason of the vote. It actually come within budget. Coming to economic classifications, compensation and goods and services is our current expenditure. There's the underspend on those, but you also see an overspend on the capital. It came about with the classification on the infrastructure grant. When the budget was done, it was classified as maintenance expenditure, but the nature of expenditure after award was of a capital nature, and if you apply the audit standards, we had to reflect it as a capital expenditure. Transfers, a small amount of 7 million wasn't spent, and it was one or two NGOs that did not submit all the SLAs and annual report compliance methods for us to transfer the funds. Our conditional grant reports, Chair, you will see that we stood at 99% of a 33.9 billion rand budget, adjusted budget. That budget was adjusted to 34.2 billion. It compares to 99.1% in the previous year, but based on a 32 billion budget. The main contributors to the underspend was the NHI expenditure at 93.8%. But if you do recall, Chair, our previous numbers were much less than this. So NHI spending actually picked up quite a bit in the last 18 months. The revised spending is set at 95%. The other grants, being the training grant and the tertiary service grant, the HIV grant, they all spend 99.5% of their budgets. We've also made a recommendation on rollovers requested. It was linked to all committed projects, and I've got a slide that will show exactly what rollovers were requested and pre-approved by budget region. So just to reiterate, Chair, you will see that we had an initial budget of 33.9 billion. We had adjustments of 9 million total for all the grants, mainly on NHI. There were significant provincial rollovers of 259 million throughout the year. The adjusted budget came at 34 million, and there was a 33.9 billion in spent on this. On the slide, you will also see that we have transferred, in terms of the DORA schedules, all the funds that were supposed to have gone to provinces, we did transfer to the national department. And you'll also see that the rollovers, as they were adjusted by provincial treasuries, were also transferred to the provinces. So we do a quarterly assessment of this, but by year end, all funds were transferred to the provinces. The training grant came in at 99.6% expenditure. It's a decline from previous year prior expenditure of 100%. And three provinces showed a minimal decline. We have requested the rollovers. Northern Cape underspent on the training grant delays in the procurement of some equipment. But yeah, again, the percentage is extremely small, and the amounts are not that significant. The tertiary services grant came in at 99.6% spent. It maintained a similar performance as in the last financial year. Three provinces slightly overspent. Again, rollovers were requested. And again, Mpumalanga and Northern Cape had some issues with the procurement of equipment. You also note here that these two grants, the tertiary grant and the training grant, are supplementary to the equitable share of provinces. So we do expect that provinces would be able to spend close to all the funds that are assigned in terms of these grants. The TV grant at 99.8% expenditure. Eastern Cape and Limpopo shows a decline of less than 1%. Again, rollovers have been requested. And although there is some pressure in many provinces in terms of budget on ARVs, it does seem that the delay in payments of ARVs and medicines contributed to some of the underspend in provinces. But obviously this would then mean that they would accrue these expenses into the new financial year, something that we would not encourage provinces to really do. The Levite grant, this is the direct grant that we transfer out to provinces, came in at 95.1% expenditure. This is a decline from last year's expenditure, Chair. We found that in Eastern Cape they had difficulty in attracting technical skills, and we do know that in the grant framework we've allowed provinces to have a percentage of, to procure or to attract engineers and the rest of it, and there was a specific issue in Eastern Cape on that. Gauteng, there was a late revision of their business plan, a very, very late submission in March, and we couldn't condone it, and that impacted on their ability to spend. We do encourage provinces to do any revisions of business plans by adjustment stage, and this was extremely late for us to consider. Northern Cape had some delays in awarding of tenders by the implementing agents and implementation of that. In all cases, we've requested rollovers. As in the last financial year, KZN, Limpopo and Western Cape spent 100% of their allocation. Western Cape in particular reduced their allocation to be able to spend all of it. They had some issues with implementing aids in the previous financial year. The insurance grant, again the one that we transferred to provinces, was at 94% exchange rate rates. Yeah. And you'll see, Chair, that we had significant improvement from 90% to 93% in this financial year. But this is also the last year that this grant will be allocated, and provinces will have to absorb this cost within the equitable share. And as you do recall, that this grant was to test some NHI models, and that has now come to an end. The indirect grants is Schedule 6 grants that we spend on behalf of provinces. Here you'll see that the NHI component, which includes the direct delivery to patients as well as the health practitioner contacting, stood at 99.3% of expenditure. The grant in itself is proving quite useful, though we've taken some reductions on budget by the National Treasury. And in this financial year, we probably have a big pressure in terms of expenditure on this grant. On the revised component, we had 98% expenditure. I did explain to you the difficulty we had between the current and capital allocations, but the total grant was still well within budget. The idle clinic components was spent at 97% spent. A small amount was available, and the HPV component was in fact totally spent, which is quite an improvement from the previous financial year. So just to conclude then, we've also requested some rollovers on the conditional grants, and they are reflected there. We are confident that most of these rollovers would probably be accepted by the provincial and national treasuries, and most of these funds are committed and have been committed either contractually or through accruals in the previous financial year. Thank you, Chair.
No, thank you. Thank you, Presidency. Honourable Members, there is a presentation. Any questions? Honourable Minister.
Thank you, Chair. I'd like to start with questions about the audit information. What is being done to address the prevalent
the current regular expenditure in the department. And what role is the department playing in addressing high level of irregular expenditure within the provincial Department of Health, which has increased over the past few years? Explain fruitful, wasteful, fruitless expenditure of 402,000 incurred by the department, and what has been done about it. And then on program 4, there is some indicators which and which show that there are less achievement of this, but there is high expenditure on them. That means less was done, but money was spent up to the tune of 99.7, almost 100%. Could you explain why such disparity? And on program 4, that is program 4, yeah. Also, the National Department should be commended for again obtaining an unqualified audit opinion for the last 3 successive years. When will this be improved to a clean audit? 5 provincial health departments received qualified audit opinions. What is being done to improve this situation? Can the department update the committee on the use of intent? Has any being made permanent yet? The Compensation Commission for Occupational Diseases has for a number of consecutive years not submitted an annual report. What is being done to address this, and by when? Despite the significant improvement, in spite there is still under expenditure in this program, that is 1.7%. What is being done to address this? Please provide details with regard to contracting of general practitioners, pharmacy assistants, and other health professionals to work in the NHI pilot site. Proper funding on and the safe implementation of NHI will be critical to its success. What is the current status with regard to NHI funding, and when will it be increased? Why is there a decline in MMCs over the past 3 years, and why has the department included other sectors like private and traditional sectors in MMC in its figures? The target of HIV test has been significantly exceeded by approximately 42% achieved, and 14.2 million targets should be commended. Have the extra tests been budgeted for? Who pays for this test? Is the NHLS properly resourced to perform this test? The department is not reaching its target of 4.3 million clients on ART yet. Yet it is still utilizing 99.7% of the budget. Does this perhaps indicate under budgeting? What steps is the department taking to reduce the cost of HRVs?
Can we Maybe when you have another
Sorry?
I'm requesting, it was quite a number of questions. Can we, so that we then give others time if there is another round of campaign questions?
That means if they don't ask them, they will not be asked. I won't guarantee that they will ask what I wanted to ask. Thank you.
Chair, performance related question. excuse me. Given the AG's findings, on the lack of reliability of the performance data in this program, how can the department itself be certain that the targets it reports on are accurate? What is being done to address this? Other than removing indicators from the annual performance plan, what are the short-term and long-term interventions the department is implementing? Could you update the committee on the state of forensic laboratories in the country, especially given media revelations on the poor state of the Pretoria Forensics Laboratory and a related 2015 Auditor General's report on the matter? Sexual crimes. Given the higher rate of sexual crimes in the country, why have three provinces not submitted their quarterly reports relating to the management of sexual and related offences? How many health facilities are designated to render services for the management of sexual and related offences in the country? Human resources, questions related to that. The department should report on the use of consultants. How much money was spent on the consultants? Was it value for money? Did the department have a skills transfer plan? What role did the consultants play in the department? Were they performing routine tasks or were they providing specialized services? The last one, Chair. How many unemployed graduates or interns has the department hired? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for the presentation. Most questions have been asked by my colleagues. But, Chair, I just want to find out, in terms of the condoms, both female and male condoms, how much the department has spent, if they can indicate to that. According to slide 31, they said that the number of medical male circumcision performed, their planned target was to do about 700,000, but they managed only to achieve 491. If they can just explain what happened, if you can explain to us. And the other question, Chair, is on slide 40. On slide 40, the department, they indicated that there's a draft tobacco product coming that is submitted to the cabinet. If maybe they can update us when would it come to parliament and all those things, if maybe they can just update us. And the other, my concern, Chair, is on page, on slide 51. One of the key strategic objectives of the department was to improve the management of health facilities at all levels of healthcare through the health leadership and the management academy. And that is a very key strategic objective, we really understand. But they plan to achieve, so they, according to their plan target, they want the, it was 40, they said 40 hospital CEOs and 200 primary healthcare facility program managers would be assessed and be coached, would be in the coaching program. But Chair, I mean, from 40 hospital CEOs, it's only 2 hospital CEOs. Why? What happened to the rest? And only 2 primary healthcare. So if maybe they can explain us why they couldn't manage to achieve this target. Same goes with the elimination on the backlog of blood, alcohol, and toxicology tests. They, according to them, their target was to percentage on backlog eliminate. They say that they want to achieve 100%, but only 67%. But that one is much better. But the other one, the toxicology test, they only out of 100%, they only managed to have only 16%. If maybe they can explain to us why they couldn't achieve their target as they indicated to, according to them, that they will get it. Other critical questions, Chair, I think they've been asked here. I think I'll stop here.
No, thank you, Honourable Member. On the CCOD program, I just want to check. We have other promotions that you have in the system, and when do you think, how many patients are you in a position to indicate to us that when do you think that all patients will be in the system of the CCOD? You have done a very important survey of patient experience in terms of patient care. Are you able to give us the findings? I always had an interest in that box, because it's always been the information box in all institutions to find. But I think it's about time now that within that as national department, we may get some information from the institutions themselves. The AG has for the past 5 years raised an issue with regard to the quality and the, I think this question has been asked. I also have an interest that AG has raised an issue about the reliability of the information. And how confident are we that the information that you are giving to us in terms of your target? And what may be the cause and factors of that situation of AG raising the reliability of your information that is being founded by when they are conducting their work. On finances, if I can just say, I may be missing something, I was looking into the which is slide number 75. In slide number 75, you say 15-16 you spent 96%. But in the it's not that. It's 76 and 77, which is health facility revitalization plan. You say the overall expenditure is 95.1. But when I look in the table, makes me to understand, which is big 77, you said 90.2. Can you make me to understand? I'm not. If you look into the table on page 77, comparing it with page 76, which is the narrative, the overall spending is 95.1. 90.2% does not reflect. Make me to understand, I'm actually a bit confused, because when I look into those numbers and that which is a narrative, I am finding a little bit of a challenge. There are quite a couple of questions that have been asked. Will allow you to, I don't know whether you are able to respond now, because I do think that we are going to have a second round definitely, because there are quite a couple of questions that members want to ask. Will you be able to answer the questions that have been given now, or do you want some space? Unfortunately, our team has not arrived yet. We will get it from you. We don't want to put you under pressure. You can answer. Okay. Or we'll hand over to you to respond. We'll have a second round on the member.
Chair, we'll start in the order, so the CFO will start with the finance question.
Thank you, Chair. Thank God as I've gotten down. The issue of the irregular expenditure, just to say that at National we've actually reduced our irregular expenditure year on year from 1.3 from about 2.6 million the previous year. But I think the bigger question is the question of irregular at the provincial level, irregular expenditure. The AGS has given us some indication that there's been a decline in the irregular expenditure year on year at province, but it's still far too high. And what we've done, and it also links to the other question of the four audits that were unqualified and what we're doing to assist provinces. We've essentially, in most provinces, introduced a program with the standard, with the Institute of Chartered Accountants, where we've actually placed chartered accountants with these provinces. For instance, in the Free State, where they couldn't quantify their legal expenditures, opening balances, closing balances, they've actually been able to do it with the assistance of National Treasury and the Provincial Treasury, and then the interactions with the Office of the Premier. Actually, an entire team to address irregular expenditure. And although irregular expenditure will still be there, at least now it can be quantified and be audited. The matter was that in previous financial years, they were qualified on the irregular expenditure amount, which means that whatever amount they disclosed, in fact, wasn't accurate in any case, and that has been the biggest issue. So we assisted Free State to get to an unqualified position. We've in fact reduced the audit issues at Mpumalanga and KZN quite significantly, to such an extent that we feel that we're on the edge of getting those two provinces to be unqualified as well. The Northwest, they've regressed in one aspect. That kind of qualification, they need to draw that back and will assist. The next problem that we're going to assist is with Limpopo. To address the issue of wasteful expenditure, we've had 400,000 rand wasteful expenditure at National. The biggest bulk of that was a penalty charge by one of our service providers, which we had to accept. It was about 400,000 rand. It basically came down to some interest charge on the overdue accounts that we had to settle with this supplier. The issue of
of consultants. Most of our consultants, or what we classify as consultants, is actually service providers. It's not a consultant, but the way the current chart of accounts is put up is we have to qualify as consultants. In our case, it's mostly on the infrastructure grant, where we pay for consultants, QSs, and project managers on the infrastructure project. So the question is, yes, it's more kind of specialized service. There's also technical assistance placed with many of our DVGs, which also then contribute to that. So it's not in fact a consultant as in the narrow sense, it's more service provider, and we deal with them as such. On condoms, the question was about what was the budget on condoms. It was about 160 million for last year, and it was about 133 million in spending on this condom budget. And just to clarify the chair matter that you've raised, you will see, Chair, that the slide is very busy because we're trying to show as much as possible on the slide, but you'll see the 93.8% in fact is a percentage of budget spent from what we've transferred to provinces. So that's 93.8% expenditure. And the 90.2% expenditure on the far right, that is in fact the comparative expenditure of the previous financial year. So what we do is we compare the previous financial year with the current financial year, just to give an indication if there's growth in expenditure or if there's some decline in the expenditure. So that should explain it, Joe, sir.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Dr. Pillay. The question that I'll ask is around time frames, that I'll respond to is around time frames for the tobacco bill. Chair, I can't answer that question now. I'll have to go back and consult with legal about dates of the different forums this document has to go through before it goes to Cabinet and before it comes to Parliament. So we'll respond in writing to that question.
Thank you, Chair and Honourable Members. I will respond to two questions related to HR. The first one was the use of intent. Our response as a department is that on an annual basis, based on the availability of funds, we recruit a number of internships for a year as per the public service regulations. So they are in the department for a year and then they exit the system. However, if any of them apply for advertised posts, then they are then in a position to be appointed if they become successful candidates. That is the use of intent. But there was a related question, question number two for HR, that asked how many unemployed graduates or interns did the department appoint? 5 years ago, I will say, we appointed 371 interns, unemployed graduates, into an internship program, initially meant for 1 year. And we recruited them using donor funds from the EU. So when they concluded their 1 year, we developed a long-term program for them, and we contracted them. And so they stopped being interns. We contracted them for 2 years, and further another 2 years. So we contracted them for 4 years, and their contract expired April 2017, and they were in the categories of finance, IT, and HR. Thank you, Chair.
Okay.
Thank you, Tanban. Thank you, Chair, for the opportunity. I'm going to start with the last few questions that are pertinent to my work and the areas I'm responsible for. In terms of the questions regarding
raised by the AG on reliability issues relating to our performance information and the quality of information of our targets. Chair, we have gradually over time improved the quality of the indicators we set in our APP, and I'm sure this has been visible to you, Chair, and to honourable members, as well as really aligning our targets and our target setting very well with the provinces. We leave out indicators because precisely it leads to a lot of audit issues. But those indicators that we take out here, bearing in mind we're still responsible for monitoring overall performance of our health system and for measuring our health outcomes, we put them in our operational plan and we do monitor them. So they are available if honourable members want to look at them by any means. We monitor them very strictly. So as an M&E member of the department, we've been in talks and we've worked quite hard with the AG and the team at the AG's office, as well as at DPME and Treasury, to discuss the ongoing problems we had in how they've been auditing our performance information, particularly at the provincial level, where there's been problems. And I think we discussed this in a number of meetings quarterly as we reported to honourable members of the portfolio committee. But to raise one example, they would get to provinces and then they would look for patient retained cards. And if that is not available, provinces and we will pick up audit issues. Now, we cannot, patient retain records are not available. Patients take them home with patients. For example, the mother-to-child card, you know. So we've come to a much better understanding. We've also developed a protocol together, whereby there's a better understanding that they developed as accountants on our performance information and how we have now picked to go about doing our business. And I'm sure that will lead to improvements on that front. Regarding the PEC survey, Chair, we have conducted the survey. Overall, the survey has shown very positive results. The final report on the patient experience of Chair's survey will be sent to us actually next Friday, because it was done by our outside service provider. But suffice it to say that it showed very favorable results, and it also showed a positive correlation between patient experience of care and the clinics that have scored high on the ideal clinic scoring system. So that was very heartening for us. But we, if you would like it, Honorable Chair, we can send you a copy of the report, but I also think with our next quarterly report we will provide, we can bring a copy of the report and also highlight some of the findings to you, because it will be quite a detailed report. Then other areas that I may be able to respond to, in terms of the question on the mentoring and coaching and the underachievement with regards to CEOs and district managers accessing the system. Now that has been a real problem and an area definitely of underachievement. It was related to the fact that the service provider who had to be contracted to oversee the coaching and mentoring program was delayed due to ITEC's funding cycle. ITEC is one of the funding partners, CEPA funding partners we have. And the approval of the funding was only confirmed in October. And this kind of delayed all the work related to this platform. Similarly, the number of managers therefore accessing the web work with this program. So that was also delayed. So in other words, when people want to access the hub, or when we do the coaching and mentoring, managers identify what their competency deficits are, then this has to be moderated by people who have been employed through this contract by ITEC. But unfortunately, for funding delays, it got stuck. But that definitely has been an area of underperformance. Sadly, so, because we want to strengthen our leadership of hospitals and also
of the state managers to improve our health system's performance. Then, in terms of, I think that was all for me. There's a number of questions relating to Program C, but I'll see what Anban said about and then I think we want to answer it or put it in writing. Oh, in terms of the forensic chemistry laboratories, that's also an old problem that we've been reporting on. And the underperformance there related to mainly the methods they were using to analyze tests. There were staffing issues, and those have largely been sorted out. The main issue was that in how they were testing for all toxins. When they do a test, they test for too many toxins. Now they're moving to a more targeted approach. And because of this, with their current resources, I was assured that they will not be having any backlog. Maybe you can compliment if you want to compliment. But that is in essence the answer.
Mr. Chair, just one question for me. The issue of when do we expect a clean audit for the national? So I was hoping for this financial year. Unfortunately, as I explained, the issue of the accruals and the methodology of the AG came into it. But we're definitely looking off, you know, be on track for this financial year to have a clean audit, especially on the financial part. So we're very close to getting that. I think our processes are quite strict and quite strict.
If I may just ask, is it possible to get a clean audit in the sector? Is it possible?
Chair, it's possible. It's just that sometimes we find that there are new requirements that might not have been in the previous cycle. And then you might not be as geared to report on those as you thought you would have been in the previous cycle. So. I think it's also good because the AG obviously also reassesses their methodologies, and we have to adapt to it. But I do feel we're quite close. I must say the indirect grants do pose a huge audit risk, you know, in terms of giving audits to us, the department. It's an audit risk that we wouldn't have had, say, about 3 or 4 years ago. But as we go, we address it. And with the AG, we also address the audit risk at the start of the cycle. So for instance, this financial year, we know an immovable asset register might be an issue for us because of the work we're doing on the indirect grant, that we're already putting measures in place to address.
Chair, in terms of the two questions I had, the one relating to CC and DD, I think your question was, can we expand to, how long will it take to expand to everybody? I think the difficulty in expanding to all chronic patients is not a capacity problem, but more a financing issue. We're currently sitting at about 1.5 million patients now, but the budget, the funding that we have from Treasury is basically fixed at that level. So while we would like to expand, and actually in many facilities across the country, patients who want to get onto the program. But our difficulty is enrolling them on the program and financial implications, which currently Treasury has not made available. We've had discussions with Treasury about how best this can happen. And their proposal is that in the adjustment budget, provinces should make funds available from within the provincial budget. Because the CCMDD, in addition to being all the benefits to the patient, also the cost saving relative to what it costs the province. Whether provinces see it with the same lens in terms of their savings, and they put money into CCMD so that they can reduce their waiting time as well as the expenditure, is something that provinces have to be convinced about. So Treasury had indicated they would pursue that. They're very supportive of the program, however, the funding from them is very limited, so we can't simply expand to everybody that would like to be on the program. But patients are wanting to be on the program. And in the Eastern Cape, it's a particular challenge. Sean, the issue relating to CCOD, I think in the morning Dr. Kisnasamy outlined where they are currently with their plans in terms of developing the annual report. The big issue is to get the AG to agree to their current report so that they can use that as a basis in order to support the final reports. But we're putting pressure on them to make sure that they finalize their report so that they can get them to
Why our numbers have declined and why we have also missed our targets for it in this report that we are reporting to. Jay, it seems like let me first say the department is still going all out to popularize male medical circumcision through advocacy within facilities and also through advertisements, but it seems like we have almost reached a saturation point in terms of people who are interested. So there's been a low demand, or let me say buy-in, even though we are trying to mobilize more men in the country. And the discussion we've had with our colleague Dr. Jochen Pillay is that probably we have to go the route of community dialogue, but also getting key people in the country, maybe even like the parliamentarians, to assist us with further popularizing this program, Chair.
My apologies, Chair. In conclusion to the response on the unemployed graduates that we employed. So when the contract expired, the plan was for the provinces, because they were spread at provincial level, at 7 provinces who were participating, and some at national health. The plan was for them to be absorbed following the normal recruitment processes in government. Unfortunately, the provinces indicated to national in writing that they are not in a position to take them on because of financial constraints. The only a province that made an effort was Limpopo. They took all of them who were placed in Limpopo on a 1-year extended contract with the intention of negotiating with the provincial treasury to work towards absorbing them through the normal process. So that is the challenge we have, and some of them applied for posts and have been appointed, some at national and some at other provinces, but largely there is a dispute that they have tendered with the department, and the matter is now at arbitration level. Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chair, according to the annual report, especially the NGO funding, the transfer to the NGO, I've just checked most of the organizations here, they all deal with HIV/AIDS. I know it's a problem in our country. It's all HIV/AIDS program. But if I remember, Cancer Association is also assisting, because currently our National Cancer Registry not up to date. Did they apply, or are they not part of this? Or what is the situation? If maybe you can update us. The other thing, Chair, I just want to understand, according to the annual report here, they said that the Office of the Health Standard Compliance, they managed to do awareness campaign in about 6 provinces. And if you remember, I think this the Office of Health of Standard Compliance, they did very well in terms of this meeting. You could see that they're waiting. But I want to find out in terms of the future program, in terms of awareness, when are you going to target other provinces? Because I think that office is doing very well. That's what I want to do.
Honorable Adams. Thank you, Chair. On page 34, I see there is a success of increasing the number of HIV tests. Can the department give the AG findings? How reliable is the data? And then are there any measures in place to ensure that women in rural areas access internal care and that health promotion intention interventions in the department implementing with regard to care, especially in the rural areas. And then, has the impact of mom connection being assessed? What is being done to improve the MMC rate? And what are some of the key learnings from the success of the PMCCM program? What will the end goal in eradication mother to child transmission be achieved? And then say, can the department update the committee on the implementation of the integrated school health policy across the various provinces? Have there been any interdepartmental blockages? The president announced in the distribution of the sanitary towels to indigenous women. How many have been distributed to them? Thank you.
Chair, maybe I haven't heard or the response on consultants. Yeah, that's one. And the other one is the update on the interim traditional health practitioner council. Should get an update on that. Doctors' rooms. How many doctors' rooms have been constructed during the pilot phase in the NHI district? Malaria is. What is the department doing to reverse the increase in malaria in the country, as well as to assist our neighboring states? It says there are 786 additional facilities that have qualified as ideal clinics, and the target was 750. Do those clinics that qualify get reassessed after a period of time, or is it just a one-off, once off? This one has been asked already about sanitary towels. I won't repeat the question. The screening of inmates for TB on admission is at 83.2%. However, the AG could not verify this indicator with sufficient evidence. If we could get some clarity on that one. I think that's it on my side, Chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Irregular and fruitless expenditure and the audit that is not clear is not acceptable. You can't have this going on every year and keep on saying, well, next year maybe it will improve. If and others who had managed to go up regress, and it is the mostly maybe the provinces, but national should make sure that there are consequences for this type of things, because we can't keep on condoning and saying, okay, fine, there will be an improvement, they regress because of this and that, when they know that there are no consequences, there is nothing to ginger them to comply. and this is it's not their money. They can't do what they feel they have to. They have to comply. If they follow their APPs, I think there wouldn't be any problem with what. Or actually, even if they alert you beforehand that this is what is happening and this is what is likely to go and happen, coming to happen, you could help them. You can't leave them alone and hope that they know what they are doing, or because of this dual competency. It is not. You are the accounting officers, you are responsible. Why spend much on condoms and when the new infections keep on increasing? There is something that is not properly done somewhere. This is not the question of that the department are not doing things properly, no. It's a question of the people keep on doing this because maybe we are failing to educate them to prevent, or there are some things that is happening. So we have to find other methods to make sure that we keep fresh infection. It's not a matter of throwing condoms. I think it was about 19 million condoms that have been given, but they didn't stop or half the infection. So let's find new innovative ways of complementing this number of condoms that have been given. Maybe we should go to school and make it part of the curriculum to teach the young. What would a nation be first instilling in the youth? We should actually teach the children to socialize them to understand this. And when they grow up, they will grow up fearing that this is a killer. Why should they kill themselves? There are other nations that don't have the type of pandemic we are having. It's because they socialize their children. Although we know the greatest driver of ill health is poverty. And let's try to eradicate poverty. There are lots of resources that our country is losing, and they are being shipped abroad. And then they give us some aid here and there to try and do this. Meanwhile, if our resources were properly shepherded and properly utilized, we would have enough money to do this type of thing, to eradicate poverty, which will stop the carnage this pandemic is visiting on our people. So it's not only the problem of health here, it's societal problem and the whole national problem. So it can't be tackled by doing tests and throwing condoms at people alone. It is supposed to be a national effort. But then underperformance at the National Health Laboratory Services. I hear that if they are doing more tests unnecessarily instead of doing one. What happens if you wanted to do, let's say, full blood count, and you don't do other things like PIs and so on and so on, then come and take some more specimen to go and read through those other things. When you find that what you have needs some more verification or things or more tests. I mean, modern machines, you throw in the specimen, it does all the test at no extra cost. So why should it be a fig leaf that is because there are more tests that are done unnecessarily? You don't just take specimen and throw them in and say do them all in case some indicator show us that this was not what we expected. No, it's a fig leaf. I mean, let's try to find out why. Where is the problem? Not try to justify the problem by saying it is somebody who just do more unnecessary tests and so on and so on. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair. Is to have a program which has lay at the Department of increasing the number of health workers.
There is one last question. Accruals, let's stop accruals. They can be stopped. It's not a given that they should be there. Thank
you. Okay, you have just lost me. It's a question in relation to, do you have a program as the department of increasing the number of health workers? The question is doctors and nurses, focusing on production, retention, and attraction, and the attraction of health workers professionals in South Africa. I'm raising this because when we, in our constituency areas, when we conduct oversight, there's one cry and one cry only. The high level of the shortage of staff. When you have a program of wisdom, and I know for a fact that the minister and the DG have said, Wisin has reflected that there is overstaffing somewhere and there is understaffing somewhere. There are more generals than soldiers. We've got more professional nurses than the enrolled nurses and the enrolled nursing assistants who are supposed to be doing the work. But I don't get it, Dr. That in fact now you are at an age to say, here are we in the country, this is the total number of professional nurses that we're having. And we have encouraged, or we are talking with provinces to place them here. We have got a less number of professional, of enrolled nursing assistants. And we are encouraging young people to go and live. We don't get that. And it is quite a challenge. Go to any area. One, when you ask, but why is this patient has been here so short, and you really see that. They are really, I was told a story, which I'm not going to tell which institution is that and which province. In fact, it's my province, but I'm going to make a follow-up. My sister-in-law lost a brother who is in some breathing problem. He was there in the clinic, given treatment, discharged, came back, hardly 3 or 4 hours, and he passed on when they were entering. And when then she asked, but why was he charged? My understanding is that you give a patient treatment and you observe for 4 hours, not unless things have changed. But a response of a nurse in that clinic is much desired. Yes, they are short staff. I've got pile of stories which I felt that, okay, we will sort this. The question is, do you have, knowing very well that the employment of health workers, irrespective of categories, lies with provinces, but do you have a monitoring mechanism of ensuring that really? Because that is why we are being, that is why we are being blackmailed by people who don't believe that as this country, as this government, led by the Afghanistan Congress, we can deliver a system, and we do have a system that is going to be a change, a game changer in this country. But they are using this. How do you think that you can have national health insurance policy when you have got a challenge of infrastructure, when you have got a challenge of shortage of staff? and they should have to stop if the reality is there. And I once said in this room, I said, if there is one factor that does not need a robot to feed a patient, that does not need a robot to perform an operation, that does not need a robot to administer treatment, it's health sector. A health sector make and break of the sector depends on your own body. I know what is your pressure. Maybe it's about time that every committee will really put it with the financial constraints in the country, I agree. But the challenge is that some, not all, because I know people are saying public health, some of the public health institutions have improved for the better. I'm always accused of being more biased to an institution where I trained, where I went. Torrens is one of the institutions that I trained, have improved for the better. Any institution in Free State, without the challenges, it has improved for the better. We've got a number of them. But there are those and clinics. So that's why the question that give us now what wisdom and what is it that you are doing. So this question is more on about, as the department, you said you engaged on wisdom, we were comfortable, we were happy, but where are the results? How are we going to stand there and be confident in talking to us, telling our people about it? So that's where the question is. The last question for me is that the indicators of infrastructure, the performance is poor, great, but there is high level of spending. The level of the performance in the infrastructure, and remember that infrastructure is about clinics, infrastructure is about the state of clinics, the state of hospitals, revitalization and the others. So what really is the problem? We do understand, Doc, that the work is being done at the provincial level, but it is our belief and that you as the leader department with the responsibility to monitor. So maybe when you get the response, I think those are the last questions from my side in terms of this round. Is there a need for round three? But can you please respond? Are you able to respond even on this round? Okay, thank you.
I'll limit him the one consultants. So in the standard chart of accounts on our BAS system, there is a line that talks to consultants. But in our case, most of these consultants are actually service providers. They're not consultants that do a job on behalf of our own employees. So in our case, because we have the NHI indirect grant, mainly your professional service providers. So you have quantity surveyors, you've got project managers, consulting engineers, geotech engineers, that all fall under that bigger scope of consultants, if you like. So they also provide a service for the contractor itself, the actual contractor that does the construction of the hospitals or clinics. And that's what this is why our consultant, so in our books we put them down as consultants because this is what the chart of accounts provide, but it's not a consultant that does any work on behalf of an employee. So we wouldn't employ quantity surveyors and project managers and architects, say in government, would use that service. We also procured a service through tender. We've gone to open tender a few years ago, and we've got databases and schedules of many of these professional service providers as we term them. I agree that irregular expenditure and a clean audit is all requirements, and we're moving towards that. Our difficulty with irregular expenditure, especially at provincial level, irregular expenditure is expenditure that is outside of a law. It can be any law, it can be the daughter, it can be the PFMA. It's very difficult for us at national to govern exactly all the processes at provincial level. And this is why we've introduced the support of SAICA, as I said, to assist with the dealing of illegal expenditure. There was also an issue of that many instances the AG would want to declare an expenditure irregular, and because there is no pushback from the province, it then gets regarded as irregular. In many instances, at national, for instance, if they want to declare something irregular, I take it up personally, I look at the facts myself, I challenge it myself, I go for technical opinion if I have to, and we kind of come to some conclusion. This is not necessarily happening in province at provincial level. When AU would say this thing is irregular, then many provinces would just accept it to be irregular without actually challenging some of the merits of the fine. But in principle, I agree. Irregular expenditure should be eradicated. We can move provinces to unqualified in many instances. I think we are at the stage where we can probably move another two in the next financial year. Other provinces have got many other issues. The churn rate of CFOs is quite big. Fine with CFO being there for 6 months, and then another one comes in acting positions. So as long as there's very little continuity in terms of HODs and CFOs at a province, it makes your outcomes of audit so much more difficult. Eastern Cape is a very good example. They've had a stable CFO, a stable HOD for the last 3 or 4 years. They've achieved unqualified audits in the last 2 financials. So that consistency in leadership, I think, is one of the key matters when it comes to this. The issue of approvals, Chair. I think I've addressed it a number of times. There's no system that I've come across that there will never be any approvals. I've not seen it. So the point is, accruals go to both revenue and expenditure. Essentially, it's a service that's been rendered in one financial year, that has not been recognized in that financial year. You then have to do an adjustment to get it into the correct financial year. That's why there's an accrual basis of account. In government, we are on a cash basis of account. So if we receive invoices in April that relate to March, then we have to accrue it as part of the disclosure note. We cannot accrue it as part of our expenditure because we are on a cash basis of accrual. It gets more complicated than that. When you go to infrastructure, you get what they call work done that not yet invoiced. So it means that you have to go back to your system, to your QS, and find out what work has been done. It has not yet been invoiced, and then also accrue for that. So the accrual is a very technical matter. I can't see it being eradicated in total, even by provinces. In fact, provinces, because of their budget constraints, are actually growing accruals at quite an alarming rate. And we've got the numbers per province to show that. That's basically on our accruals. We're trying to reduce it. We're trying to keep it to a manageable level. Trying to keep it to a point where it wouldn't exceed 30 days, for instance. It gets to 30 days and beyond, and obviously it becomes a bigger issue for us. We're trying to keep this back.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank
you. So the question on the whole life epidemic issue in Gauteng, and yes, how the office really did a very good job to identify. To clarify what happened there, and I just want to make sure that I understand the question to have been, what's the department doing in other provinces to prevent the same thing from happening, or to leverage on the good practices that come out of this process, to leverage that for the other provinces. So Chair, yes, the National Department of Health immediately conducted a rapid assessment of all 9 provinces to see what is happening in those provinces around mental health care services. How ready or not, what are good practices, what are weaknesses in terms of implementing the national policy framework and strategy for mental health. That was completed, Chair. There is a complete report that is available. I don't know if the DG and the Minister actually presented it here. I don't know why I've got a nagging feeling. But if not, we can certainly make that report available to the Parliament and here and to the Portfolio Committee on Health. Then there was a question about the Cancer Association. Why are there no transfers? Yes, indeed, there are no transfers to any cancer associations because we don't have any agreements with the cancer associations outside of the department. And because we have no agreements, we cannot transfer money. But I must say the minister appointed a very active ministerial advisory committee on cancer, and they actually assisted us very well. And they consist of specialists in the area of cancer around the country from private sector, from the NGO sector, and also from the academia. And they've actually assisted us to complete the cancer policy and framework for South Africa, and that is complemented by the cancer policy and framework on cervical cancer and on breast cancer. Then there was a question on whether there is interdepartmental blockages when it comes to implementing school health. No, Chair, I must say this program works very well between the Department of Health and the Department of Basic Education and also the Department of Social Development as a partner. So the issue of whether we hand out sanitary pads, not as the National Department of Health, Chair, the program of sanitary pads for schoolgirls is with the Department of Women and also provincial basic education departments are handing out sanitary pads at school, Chair. Chair, now how many doctor's rooms in the pilot area since the pilot started till now? So we talk about units that we add to clinics, and these units may consist of either four or six consulting rooms, and so we've added units to 164 clinics, but it comes to between 680 and 800 individual doctor's consulting rooms. So Chair, to this issue of the doctor's consulting rooms, I want to respond there to your question on, you know, really what are we doing about infrastructure? We spend a lot of money, but you can't see it. I think it's also because the department, we don't market very well what we do. We are focused, and I don't think it's the wrong thing, this is why we are getting paid. We are focused on what is weak and what we must fix. But Chair, you will remember, I think shortly after 2010, 2011, Minister had a favorite slide that was showing red, orange, and green in the provinces with regard to infrastructure, and he always paused at the Eastern Cape showing how very red the Eastern Cape is against other provinces. If Minister was to bring that presentation again, Chair, there would be a lot more green, and especially in the Eastern Cape, because the Eastern Cape was so bad, we really, really focused on the Eastern Cape, and we built the largest number of new clinics in the Eastern Cape, and also revitalization. Chair, the problem was a big problem. But where we are with now primary health care and especially hospitals are not included, so let me not say primary health care, but where we are with facilities and infrastructure is that we are now working on multi-year, very specific plans, Chair, that will tell us. I like to use Louis Trichardt Clinic as an example because I feel so sorry when I have to go there. And I say to my infrastructure colleagues, if only I could tell Louis Trichardt, where are they in the queue? Are we building them a new clinic in 2018, 2019, or 2020? And there's many Louis Trichardt around the country, of course. So we're working on a multi-year plan, Chair, that identifies the facilities in terms of the budget that we have for a specific year by name. And, of course, it's technical, but it has to be approved by our MECs because it's the political leaders who point to priorities. And so we will also use that plan to try and get more funding and more capacity to work faster with the infrastructure because we won't win if we don't improve the infrastructure. What are we doing about malaria, Chair? And how are we working with the neighboring country? There was a slide in the trying to find the number in the PowerPoint. I won't take long because I found the place. It's slide 20. That talks about elimination. Eight, where South Africa works with seven other countries to make eight countries, and that's why it's called elimination eight, to zoom in on malaria elimination. And then also, especially with our neighbors, we formed this group that has got the acronym MOSASWA, which stands for Mozambique, South Africa, Swaziland, Malaria Initiative. And so what we are doing, and the CFO could probably say exactly how much money, but he recently had to approach the Treasury to actually get an emergency fund for us to get more DDT because of the rains, Jay. When it rains, it's favorable for malaria, which means we need more resources to spray DDT because it has been found, it's been scientifically proven that the particular organism of malaria that we have in southern Africa, in SADC, is susceptible only to DDT. Let me move away, sorry G, I'm just going to the word where I captured my question. So that was malaria. Ideal Clinic, I'm so happy to report that no, it's not a once-off. When we came, and I really appreciated when this committee gave us a day to come and present on Ideal Clinic, the last time when we presented, we showed our progress, we showed what we achieved 2015-16, and what we achieved 16-17, but there was also a table that showed, unfortunately, how many slipped, which means we go back and we recheck and we recheck. Chair Wisen, yes, we were proud to always say to you that we completed primary health care and we're still busy with hospitals, but you are asking where are the results and what are you doing about the results, and your memory serves you right. When we were saying there's certain cases that perhaps not critical at the moment, but others are critical, and there's areas where there's more of certain cases than in other, that's more than what is needed, and that we actually have to reassign staff. So, Chair, so that was communicated to the provinces that they really have to start that work, and that they have to start it together with organized labor. You have to move with organized labor if you're going to reassign staff from one area to the other, but there are also areas where we'll have to motivate for more staff. So Dr. Andrews can also add to this, but we've actually analyzed each and every facility. We've got a report for each and every facility that shows where they are with the key cadres, and because we ourselves are now growing impatient with the provinces, and it's another area as national where we will now have to intervene, we call it, but the provinces may call it interfere, but work with the CFO and National Treasury and the provincial CFOs, HR colleagues, and provincial treasuries to see over time, Chair, if we can get the resources to grow the numbers in areas where there are shortages. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I wanted to also add on what Ms. Hunter is saying in terms of the question, is there a monitoring system? If there is on a month, not a monthly, if every time National Health Council sits, there is an expectation that the HOD, previously it used to be done by National at the consolidated level, where National will be reporting on their numbers in terms of critical posts, nurses, doctors, registrars, and all the specialists and all that. However, the National Health Council has now changed the approach to say each HOD will present their own information so that they can be interrogated in terms of the why. Why don't we have oncologists? Why don't we have registrars? Why and why and why? And what are the future plans, immediate plans, short-term and medium-term? So that is the part of the monitoring that the National Health Council has put into the monitoring system on a practical level over and above all the reports that we normally receive. Thank you, ma'am.
Just to add to what Ms. Reni and Ms. Hunter have said, with regards to your question on what is our strategy to increase the number of health professionals, you know, in a more concerted way in terms of provisioning, retention, attraction, etc. As Dr. Pillay pointed out,
as part of the NHI implementation structures, we have two very important committees, the Committee on Tertiary Services and the Committee on Human Resources for Health. Now, our current human resource for health strategy, which specifically will define very well the new strategies, our old one has expired now and we are busy working on the new one, and this very committee will now take that work forward so that we have a new strategy for HRH for the health sector. In terms of the question from Honourable Member here on how can we complement this condom distribution with other strategies, yes, we do have a comprehensive strategy for HIV prevention, which includes a variety of methods, including male medical circumcision, test and treat, etc. So there's a whole suite of interventions, including targeting young people through the She Conquers campaign. And the She Conquers campaign is nicely outlined in the minister's forward in our annual report, so I won't go into that in detail. In terms of the screening of inmates and the accuracy of information, this was a problem in the past, because we were dependent in terms of the denominator. When we calculate the number of inmates screened, we have to take it out of the total number of inmates. And those numbers that the Department of Correctional Services used to give us used to not be very reliable. We found out through the AG reporting to us. So we've decided now just to make our target total numbers screened and not give a rate. And that was how it was dealt with, to improve reliability of information. In terms of the number of doctors' consulting rooms that were constructed in the past financial year, 62 consulting rooms were actually constructed in the previous year, of which 60 consulting rooms, doctors' consulting rooms, have actually reached full completion, and two continue into this year and also under construction. Chair. Then in terms of the impact of Mom Connect, the actual impact of Mom Connect has not been measured as in a randomized controlled trial, with the impact of Mom Connect isolated as an intervention with its effectiveness with regards to impact measures. No, that has not been done. But we do know that there's been a decline in our maternal mortality rate from 154 deaths per 100,000. I mean, from 165 deaths per 100,000 live births in 2012 to 154 deaths per 100,000 live births among moms giving birth in 2016, which is almost a 50% decline in maternal mortality from our baseline, which we took in 2009 for the MDG. Similarly, our infant mortality rate is coming down. So this speaks to an impact level of Mom Connect. We also get a lot of compliments as well as complaints about the health services that they report, to which we can then immediately respond, liaising with Mufante, etc. So it is definitely having a positive impact, if for nothing else but educating moms about their pregnancy and helping them to act more promptly. How reliable is the data in our HIV test? I'm not sure about the question here, whether it relates to the reliability of the HIV test itself, which is a very reliable test, or is it the reliability of the reporting of the data. Now, as with all data, there will always be some measure of error in reporting due to capturing errors, issues relating to shortage of data capturers, etc. But that we do have a data improvement strategy relating to reporting on all our performance information. And regarding to elimination of mother-to-child transmission, we do have a strategy which we are proactively implementing to eliminate mother-to-child transmission of HIV.
Chair, I think there's two questions left. The one relating to the Interim Traditional Health Practitioners Council. We have appointed a registrar for the Interim Traditional Health Practitioners Council. In order to finalize the work of the council and establish them as a full council, what is required is funding to so that the council can be fully capacitated, which requires funding from Treasury. It's actually in the Traditional Health Practitioners Act. Unfortunately, to date, Treasury has not been made or to make a application to the council. And so we continue to have the council in its current form,
without finalization, but they have a registrar currently, and they are performing activities. However, they would like to become fully independent and being able to collect fees from the traditional health practitioners so that over time they can become self-sufficient. But in order to do that, they do need seed funding from the National Treasury, which we have made several budget bids for, but to date we have not been very successful. In terms of the question relating to the infrastructure and the spending, I think when the infrastructure targets are set up, the targets are not linked to the budget necessarily, but to the infrastructure requirements. So the unit would get a sense of how many facilities require repair, maintenance, and based on that, they would then pursue those pieces of work. And only at the end of that process would they understand what are the actual financial implications and the time constraints in order to complete that work. So I think the AG's perspective is that you were given a budget for X number of facilities, and the assumption is that those facilities were costed, and the basis on which the budget was given, which is not a correct assumption. Because basically, you're given a report of a facility in disrepair, which you then have to get the necessary professionals to assess, give you a quotation, and then start the work, and then you find out, I suppose, what the financial implications are. And so, consequently, then you would then complete so many projects. But to assume that because you spent all of these funds and you didn't clear all the facilities that were listed, that basically you haven't had reached the inspection.
No, thank you. Thank you very much, Dr. Clay and Chief. You will understand that it's always my belief, until I'm told otherwise, that I am living in my own mind. This sector, it's not only about the high powered English that is about that ordinary man and woman, a young person who goes to a clinic and has expectations that he's going to get medicine. And he or she is there. You know that there are still clinics that people chew at 5:30 or 4:30 because there are serious limitations that some of the health workers will stop working at 2 and can come to come again. I think even on our side, we must now stop being generous. In clinic X in this province, this is what happened. I'm raising this because it's not that there is no work that is being done. And I always believe that the make and the break of any health sector is about the small things that we're taking for granted. How clean the institution is, what is the attitude of workers, and what is the attitude of communities themselves. When we were talking about STI, none, even Doc himself and you responding, have never touched on the role of communities. Health is a societal man. It starts in my home to educate my children on how to behave. Can't expect the Department of Health to do that. I am to do it at home before it is being done at a school, before it's then being done at the hospital. So I think it's about time that there's a question that I forgot to ask. Have you assessed the impact of clinic committee and hospital board? Because those are the institutions that are closer to our people. So as much as we speak high-powered English here, obviously concerned about, but our people, their endeavor and what they're expecting is that when they go to a clinic at 7 o'clock, at least by 6 o'clock, he must, or she must be home. Not that there are no clinics that are here. There are no health workers that are not here. So we have got that responsibility. And I can tell you, between now and the end of this term, I don't know what other means. My endeavor is how best to ensure that our institutions are managed in terms of the administration and in terms of clinical. Because without a proper administration, there won't be any proper clinical work. Without any clinical work, without clinical work, there will never be exact. And I'm raising this as Dr. Kulay. I'm not naive from the fact that you are doing a good work in terms of where this sector is coming from. Leave us as politicians when we want to gain what health manage. We speak as if we were never born in South Africa. We were never, and I'm talking about the sector that I work, there's no other sector that I work in, where a patient was treated on the basis of caste, where a patient was given food on the basis of caste, where I'm not saying that because I'm apologetic of that I'm going to be told, I'm going to be labeled as being racist. No, it's because that's what I grew up in this sector. And I know for a fact that the programs that this government is putting in place are programs that are to address those challenges. But there are things that really we are to gear ourselves to them. We are still very weak. Where are we in terms of the nursing curriculum? Where are we in terms of nutrition? Yes, we can't separate nutrition from the high rate of unemployment. But what is it? Are we working in standards? What is our program with social development, agriculture and fisheries? And basic education. So I'm saying as we move forward in this 23 years, we must take one step back. And maybe there's going to be time that, as you did in White City, that we are put together under one group for 7 days to then say, what are the things that we have done and what are the things that we haven't done with the financial challenges that are there. But what is it that, and what then becomes the role of community? All of us here belongs to a community. Or is it because we've got medical aid? Or is it because we don't have brothers and sisters that attend these public institutions? It is better to, we have voice there. And I do think that we must then begin to be looking into. So when we raise these questions, at times we may be sounding as a broken record, but it is my understanding that we believe that what is key is are those small things that we identify for granted. I do think that as we are preparing, because we're preparing for people to go up, we are going to be standing there in terms of our budget vote, tell the country, tell our people what is it that you have done, where have been your weaknesses, what is it that we think that is to be done. But in the center, we must not be apologetic. And I think that's where the department is weak, in talking to our people in the language that they will understand. And I'm saying this, and I want to labor on this. I'm saying this not because the department has not done anything, but I know that we are facing the challenge that the work, the bulk, the sector's work is in provinces and in districts. How then are we going to ensure that we are to draw lessons? I was listening to them in the public hearing on life. I don't think there is any person who would want to make a political mileage about that situation. But that situation is to say to us, what is it that we think we must do right without being subjective. Affect our authority as politicians, because TB has got no political affiliation. FBI has got no political affiliation. Diabetes has got no political affiliation. What is it as ordinary members working together with you, assisting us? So together we have got the responsibility of ensuring that at least the social conditions of our people in terms of this sector is then being achieved with the challenges that we are in. We haven't touched what is happening in the farm working situation, because things there, if you talk about nutrition, it is there. It is there. So I'm saying we are in a very difficult situation, but we are doing our level best. We will work continuously work together. We may be hard at you. We will be hard at you at times, but it's not because you don't appreciate the work that you are doing, but it's because when I go to my constituency in that clinic in Kenha VD, what I see makes me think when I receive a call, all of us receive calls. If there's one person who really makes me feel sleepless night, it's Dr. Maisele. Because Dr. Maisele wants things to change. Not because he's unreasonable, but it's because we see what's happening on the ground. Thank you very much. We'll meet in our budget vote. We'll still come back to you. There are some data that we will need that is going to assist all of us as we are. But thank you very much, and thank you for people that have come to listen to us. Not the end, but we do think that we have traveled this journey difficult as it is. We are still going to travel. The first meeting we had, we said, in this term, when we finish the term in 2019, we want to leave the next. I don't know whether we're going to achieve that, but I think we'll achieve that. Even if it's just a project that we'll then be proud of as the Department of as the Portfolio Committee on Health. Our meeting has come to